It's Thursday, June 10th. Julio Jones finally got traded. Rodgers continues to stay away. And Naomi Osaka has a moment with mental health that I'm very glad she discussed. We'll get into all of that. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Matt Ford. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. Matt, it's been a while. I was pretty impressed. You put out a video on Instagram. I don't think you were in Central Park, but you're down in Manhattan just boxing away. And I was like, oh, whew, better not get Matt upset.
That's right, man. You better stay in line today. The Instagram is at mmford10. Everyone should click follow on that. I have dozens of followers on Instagram. The boxing is it's a good workout. Maybe one day I'll square off with Logan Paul and become a multi-billionaire. That's the goal.
Did you pay for that fight?
I did not. Did you?
No, I value my money way too much to pay for that fight. Plus, I just go on Twitter in the morning and watch all the highlights. Like, there's nothing like that I need to pay for that fight. One thing I left out, by the way, of the rundown, and we will get to it at the very end. Matt and I enjoy hearty laughs. We laugh a lot, especially when we're doing this together. And we're going to end the show with our favorite tweets of the last couple of weeks. Mine is, I sent it to Matt yesterday. It's absolutely mind-blowing. It's not sports-related, not Montez Sweat-related, which is making news as we record this today. We won't touch that, don't worry. But we'll have a lot of fun at the end. So stay tuned to the end. We're going to laugh. We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to have fun now. Let's start with the big trade, Matt.
Yeah, let's do it, Jeff. I don't know if you heard this, but Julio Jones traded to the Titans. They got a second and fourth rounder back in two separate years. Lots of ink has been spilled about this trade already, Jeff. What do you make of it?
Well, let's start with the compensation. Not a lot, obviously, right? We saw like Stephon Diggs, who was four draft picks to the Bills. We've seen other trades kind of be more compensation. Here's why I think Julio did not get as much. Not that he's not good, not that he might not be a future Hall of Famer. It's his age, his health, and Tennessee would probably have to give him a contract extension. If he plays well this year, next season he'll have 1 year left. Not a lot of money, and boom, he's going to want to get an extension. And Tennessee will be in a spot where if he plays well this year, they're going to be forced to pay him, right? In Atlanta, if they got any first-round pick, which no one thought they would get, they would have traded him right away. So I give the Titans credit for going out and trying to improve their team, right? I very rarely will knock anyone for trying to improve their team. Now, I will put a wet blanket, pour cold water on the Titans in just a second. But I appreciate them going out and trying to acquire more talent, especially to help on offense, right? They lost Corey Davis. They bring in Julio Jones. Now you have with A.J. Brown and Fitzpatrick and Derrick Henry, you have an offense that can go. The problem is, Matt, I'm not really sure how different this makes them from last season, right? Last season, Corey Davis is not Julio Jones, but he still put up a lot of production for them, right? In the play-action passing attack. A.J. Brown, we know, is very good. They lost one of their tight ends to I think, New England, right? He went to New England. They're still figuring out kind of what to do at right tackle. Their left side's pretty good in the offensive line. Defensively, 32nd last year in pressure rate, 32nd on third down. They addressed some of that in the draft, right? They drafted the Fairley kid and Elijah Molden, who I really liked out of Washington. They got Bud Dupree coming off an injury, and they got Autry, the kid from the Colts, who's in his eighth season. So when you look at it in totality, Matt, I'm not sure they're that much different. Their odds did not drop very much to win the Super Bowl, make the Super Bowl. They're now tied with the Colts, I believe, in most books to win the South. I mean, the Colts with their bum-ass Carson Wentz. Like, I don't understand how they're, you know, like, that's not good for the Titans. My last thing on this before you respond is my biggest holdup on saying this is a slam dunk, it's going to get the Titans over the top, is their offensive coordinator situation, right? So Arthur Smith is now the head coach in Atlanta. Arthur Smith came in and became the OC, I believe it was 2 years ago now, maybe two. I forget, I got to look it up, but whatever it was. They took off, right, offensively. Run the ball, play action pass, kind of keep Tannehill out of obvious third down passing situations. And we know 2,000 yards last year, but they had the second most rushing attempts, which is not always the best metric because when you're winning, you run the ball more, but you know they weren't winning every game. And their 30th in passing attempts. Matt, that's not a formula for success in the NFL long-term, right? It's not how you win a Super Bowl, but running that much and passing that little. So what does the new OC do now with Julio Jones? They continue this, right? They have a defensive-minded head coach. Those guys tend to lean a little bit more conservative, right? They want to run the football, play defense, hit a couple play action passes. So if they just run the same offense back, I don't know if that's good enough to beat the Chiefs. That's the goal, beating the Chiefs.
So, Jeff, I agree. The Titans kind of remind me of a blackjack player who keeps hitting on 16 and not busting. Like every year, they kind of run back this formula of feed Derrick Henry. He gives you, 1,500 plus yards. And Tannehill does enough to sort of get you, to contend, I guess. I don't fault them for not improving their defense while improving their offense. Like, good for them. I obviously think they're better with Julio Jones than they would be without him. That's hot take of the decade, right? What I thought was interesting is they didn't seem to have to give up too much. The comp is in line with what the Cardinals did for DeAndre Hopkins, plus or minus David Johnson. Odell Beckham went for a first and a third. Carson Wentz went for a two and a three. It's just kind of interesting to like compare all these guys. But look, I think Tennessee is there. They seem to believe that their way forward is kind of just like doing the same thing, and adding Julio Jones to that offense will improve it. But, I don't know. You said it. Like, is that enough to beat the Chiefs? Probably not. But if he plays, like Julio Jones, they'll be a pretty exciting team. And who knows, man? It's the NFL. Anything's possible. So I like the move. I'm glad they didn't have to overpay for him.
Again, I'm fine with the move, right? They went out and got a talented player to help their offense, but this is more about philosophy for me, right? Like, is their philosophy going to change where they, and maybe Ryan Tannehill just isn't that guy who's going to really, be part of a downfield passing attack without the play action pass, right? Again, play action pass, fantastic. He's great at it. They did the right thing here. They added on defense, but I'm just not sure it's enough to beat the Chiefs. And that is always going to be the barometer. And look, the Browns, I think, did a great job this year. They added three defensive cornerbacks, right? Or three defensive, I should say, to their roster this offseason with the draft and free agency. Like, they're in the right direction. Buffalo added two pass rushers in the draft. I mean, I think that's important, right? They're building for that. I think philosophy-wise, Tennessee is just not where those teams are at, and that's what worries me most about them. It's not really the Julio trade. It's the fact that they need to change their philosophy as well as adding Julio Jones. And I have a hard time believing that's going to happen because of the history of what they've done there and because of a defensive-minded head coach. Most of those guys we know tend to be kind of more on the conservative side offensively. Belichick's obviously the outlier for all of this, but he had Tom Brady. And last I checked, Ryan Tannehill's not Tom Brady.
True. I can confirm. One thing I would say, too, is like for a second and a fourth, I feel like there are 20 teams that could have made this move and sort of had the same justification that the Titans do. It's like, yeah, the Titans are an upper echelon team. You add Julio Jones for a second and a fourth. Like, sure, you're trying to win the Super Bowl, right? Like, why? Like, for that price, I'm just a little confused why San Francisco is the obvious one. But why not, the Rams or even Kansas City or Buffalo? Like, why wouldn't one of these teams go all in with a guy like that? I'm curious if some people were a little scared off of this injury or the injury history with him. But I just think that the cost was so low that he could have made sense in a lot of places. Green Bay, of course, being another one.
Yeah, I totally think it was age, injury, and the contract extension that he's going to be due this year. Yeah. If he plays well, he's going to get an extension. And that to me is talked about, but not talked about enough as the reasons why this is happening why no one went and traded for him, right? Is that you have to pay him more money in a year or two. And some teams just aren't in a position to do that or not in a position. They just don't want to do that. That might be the better way to say it, right? Just don't want to do it.
He's currently the highest paid player on the Titans for this coming year, which is interesting and obviously a reason Atlanta traded him.
Interesting.
Well, speaking of money and the Packers, actually, Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if you've heard, he's been in the news lately, Jeff. I don't know what position he is. Maybe we can look that up. He did not report to minicamp, the mandatory minicamp, this past week. He forfeits a workout bonus. Look, we have to talk about him. I'm just kind of curious, like, if your stance on where, you know, how this is going to play out for him has changed at all, if you think he's gaining any leverage by sitting any of this stuff out.
Well, he's not gaining leverage. And people have made the point that this is the first time he's ever not been to offseason workouts. But I'm pushed back a little bit on that. And that is true. But remember, as we were nearing the end of the CBA negotiations for this current CBA, right, which was signed before free agency last year, right? It was like March of 2020. The reason why there was some consternation at the end of that from the players, not the reason, one of the reasons why, I should say, was because Aaron Rodgers appeared out of nowhere at the end of the negotiation and told everyone that he wanted to eliminate offseason workouts, right? That he did not want there to be offseason workouts anymore in the CBA between, you know, the players and the owners. So he's wanted to not show up for a while now, but he's had workout bonuses. He's had reasons to be there. Now he has no reason to be there. Now he's not, doesn't have a workout bonus. You know, he's fine forfeiting the workout bonus. And I continue to say the Packers are not trading him. Let's talk about why they're not trading him. One is they're a good football team. They don't have to trade him. They don't, you could call his bluff. All right, sit out, Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is not being, he's not going to be the host of Jeopardy. Right? It's not, I mean, I feel like that's not going to happen anymore. And just, all right, Rodgers, just retire. All right, well, fine. You win, I guess. You retire and everyone will think that you quit, right? Like, all right, fine. Be my guest. Don't make money this year. Go retire. Like, all right. As much as Rodgers wants to have control and is okay with the label he's getting now, does he really want to be the guy that kind of just quit after two NFC Championship games because he didn't like the Packers front office? I don't know. Doesn't seem like what he wants to be. I did not know this, but I learned this. I knew they can fine you for not being at mandatory minicamp or not being at training camp. In the past, though, when you came back or when you redid your deal, the team would just forgive your fine. It happened all the time. Aaron Donald would just not show up all training camp. They'd fine him, in air quotes. He'd show up and they'd be like, all right, we rescind all your fines. In the new CBA, the fines are mandatory. They cannot be rescinded. And that's a lot of money for Rodgers. It's like $90,000 a day in training camp to not be there. Now, we heard the report that the Packers could do him a solid and excuse him, have an excuse absence, not be there at minicamp or training camp. I mean, who knows if they do that? I think they will, to kind of give him, you know, just be like, hey, bud, here, we'll throw you a bone. We want you to be here. We don't want to fine you. We want you to be here. But, Matt, I just don't think he wants to lose all this money in the end.
Yeah. I think this is playing into the Packers' hands a little bit, because I agree. He's not gaining anything by sitting out anymore. Like, to do the full media assault, which he did, which, you know, he clearly orchestrated on draft night, for the chance to maybe get out of there, you know, maybe create a little bit of a bidding war, like, that's over. Now, at this point, Green Bay isn't going to trade him this, you know, for this coming year for a bunch of draft picks. Like, that's silly. And in the meantime, you're reading the reports of Jordan Love getting the first team reps, which is the best thing that could happen for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't need these reps right now, but Jordan Love does. So they can see what they've got with him. And, you know, you're going to see this happen. We're going to talk about our, you know, sort of tropey headlines coming up later in the show. Like, the reports are going to be glowing that Jordan Love is picking up the offense and wow, like, all the receivers love him. And of course they have Rodgers back, but, you know, of course that's what's going to happen here. So that the pressure will come back onto Rodgers, who, by the way, Jeopardy might not be in the cards right now, but he clearly wants to be a famous person after he retires. And quitting on the Packers after two straight years of almost getting to the Super Bowl is not a good PR move. He's not going to do it. So I personally think that, and James Jones said this, who's like the Rodgers whisperer, his former teammate, he said on, I think, Coward's show that he thinks that Rodgers will be back for training camp, which is sort of the first of like the inner Rodgers sanctum to sort of whisper that kind of stuff. So I think this thing nears an end soon, and it will all wonder why we wasted our breath for 4 months.
It's been great content, right? I mean, we've talked about this now for months and months and months. And yeah, in the end, I just believe he's coming back. Like, the Packers have the leverage. I do not know why people think Aaron Rodgers has the leverage. I will say, though, and we'll get to Jordan Love headlines later, but very quickly, if Jordan Love was this good, like franchise quarterback level talent and elite player, the Packers probably would have traded Aaron Rodgers already. They probably would have, and Aaron Rodgers might have known that and not pushed as hard as he has, because he knows that they'll say, okay, fine, just leave. Like, we'll trade you, get out of here. So I do think he's not that good yet. He might get there. But a lot of times with these young guys, we knew right away Pat Mahomes was good, right? We knew right away Russell Wilson was good. We knew right away Deshaun Watson was good. We knew right away Herbert was good. You know, Lamar Jackson. All these guys. Josh Allen's an outlier, right? He's an outlier. So if Love's not ready now, he can always be ready. But will he be the elite level guy if he doesn't have it now? History has shown probably not, Matt.
Maybe, but of course the counter argument is Aaron Rodgers himself, who the first year he was the starter after Favre was 1-6-10. So who knows? But I agree that he calculated his leverage. He went all in, clearly. But don't be surprised when the Green Bay newspapers are all like, man, this Jordan Love kid can really spin it, right? You know, tight end number three for the Packers that Aaron Rodgers doesn't even know his name, so he can't get in trouble. Like, that's coming. Get ready for it.
Oh, of course it is.
Speaking of roster moves and a couple of this Derwan James story is really interesting. So for those who aren't totally up to speed on offensive tackle transactions in the middle of June, so Derwan James was on the Broncos. He opted out last season, so he gave up the chance to play last year. It was pretty highly regarded from the year before. This offseason, in an offsite training session, not at the Broncos facility, he injured his Achilles and Denver cut him, and they are trying to avoid his salary, so they're not going to pay him. But Baltimore signed him to a 2-year deal this week, which I think is like really interesting for Baltimore. They're already claiming that, hey, he might even be able to come back this season, which would be somewhat of a surprise given the Achilles injury and an offensive lineman. I don't know. There's a lot to react to here, but I'm curious, I guess, Jeff, what stands out to you?
That he's filing a grievance against the Broncos, not against the advice from the NFLPA to not go there, right? He's basically alleging that the Broncos sent him workouts and he was following the workouts the Broncos sent him. And it just feels tough to prove that you're doing that. But also, you did it when you had OTAs to be at, right? Like, he chose not to be there. And so it feels very tough for him to get this money back because it's in the contract. They can do this. It's not illegal to cut a player who's hurt in this manner, put him on non-football injury list. If this, you know, the PA is in charge of these negotiations. The PA is the one who allowed this to be put in the CBA or you know, didn't negotiate it out. So while he can't file agreements against the PA, which people thought he would do, because I don't think there's any grounds there, he's not winning this one either, Matt.
Well, can you explain why someone like him would not go to OTAs and work out on his own? Like, Aaron Rodgers is one thing, but like, why was he even working out on his own in the first place?
Well, if you recall, when there was a big stink about NFL players boycotting the offseason workouts, and there's different phases of offseason. There's phase one, which is just lifting and meetings. There's phase two, which is lifting meetings, a little bit of on-field work. And there's phase three, which is the organized team activities, really the OTAs, when you're on the field practicing. We're seeing some clips of those, right? People tweeting about those. And there's the minicamp. The NFLPA told the players to stay away as basically a boycott. Now, again, these are voluntary outside of the mandatory minicamp. So, and there are players that don't go anyways. But because they were so forceful about it, right? Because they wanted this to be a thing, when Juwan James got hurt, the NFL used this as an example of why you should be in offseason workouts. Because if he had gone hurt in Denver, they would have had to pay him his salary this season. Now, they could have found a way to do some sort of injury settlement, but he would have made a lot of money this season if he had gone hurt at the Broncos facility. So this is what it's about. It's about the, and I'll be fair, a lot of times if you get hurt away from the facility, the team will just pay you. They'll just pay you. I mean, like, oh, it sucks it happened. Like, you got hurt, but we like you. You're part of our future. We're going to pay you. Juwan James sat out in 2020. He played, I believe, three games in 2019. They paid him a lot of money, and they haven't got the return back on Juwan James yet. So they got rid of him. Like, this is all the reason. Like, if this happens to Pat Mahomes, the Chiefs aren't cutting Pat Mahomes. They're not redoing his deal. They pay him out, and he gets ready for next season. But it happened to a player who the Broncos, you know, were questioning his commitment, sat out 2020, played three games in 2019. There was some talk about him not kind of coming back as fast as he should be. And so that's part of all of this. And the PA so forceful boycott, which a bunch of players said, you know, give the two birds to him. A lot of players showed up because guess what? We kind of like offseason program. It's easy. It's no stress. Fun to hang out with our buddies. We enjoy being there. It's a fight, in my opinion, not worth having. And we're seeing now, obviously, big numbers at these OTAs.
Yeah, well, Tom Brady was the one who was like, we need to, I think he said, like, stand united and not go to these OTAs. And, of course, Tom Brady at minicamp, even though he's 40,000 years old and doesn't need to be there, but he's there anyway. So kind of funny move by him. I don't know, man. I think that if Juwan James hadn't opted out of last season, which I don't think should necessarily be held against him, you know, we don't know his medical situation. We shouldn't. That's obviously like a part of this. And it's funny. I mean, he, on the other hand, in his grievance that he's filing, he's talking about how Denver cut some corners on their COVID protocols or something like that. So he's trying to muck this thing up. It's ugly. I think that, I don't know. I mean, this whole like union OTAs thing just felt like it fell kind of on its face. And I imagine as a player, like, why wouldn't you want to train at the facility? Like, if something happens, it's there. They give you free food. Like, you get roster bonuses. Like, why wouldn't you go there?
Well, your workout is better away from the facility. Okay.
Why?
But there's a lot of benefits of being in the facility, especially, you know, if you're a young player, helps you learn about, you know, the playbook, gets you in with the coaches. And there's just a lot of benefits of it. Like, again, you hang out with your buddies, you enjoy yourself. So, I liked it. I'm not going to lie. I liked it.
Why is it better to work out on your own?
Like, you get a better workout. It's more tailored to what you do. You know, you have your trainer there. You know, the workouts at the facility tend to be kind of just very generic.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I don't know. Well, the other piece of this obviously is good for the Ravens. You know, everything. This is just like what happens. It's like, oh, some team had a dumb thing, and then a good player goes to Baltimore for nothing. Like, okay, perfect. Like, that's just sort of how the NFL works. But enough about Juwan James. I have been waiting to talk to you about this topic for a while. So, in a sport we don't talk often about here, in tennis, Naomi Osaka, she cited some mental health issues that forced her, unfortunately, to withdraw from the French Open. She was fined for not showing up to press obligations, and it became this whole kerfuffle. And of course, we started to think about how that applies to the NFL, right? Like, in the NFL, there's so much media availability. There's so much interaction between the media and players that it just feels like a matter of time before, in some of the other sports, that this issue is going to rear its head. So I'm curious what you thought of what Osaka did and how you think this will come back around in the NFL, if at all.
So, yeah. So I am very glad she spoke about her mental health, right? And I hope she seeks the help she needs and feels better very soon. Because far too many athletes don't talk about any of this, right? They'll talk about anxiety, depression, being down, being up, whatever, the stress, all you want to talk about. So I saw a sports psychologist for 10, 12 years after my sophomore year in college, maybe my junior year in college, I forget which one. I was just tired of talking to my dad about stuff. And he's like, he found me someone to talk to. And he was great. The best thing I've ever done in my life. And again, I don't think I was depressed, anxiety, I don't think any of that was what I was dealing with. I just need someone to talk to. And when I had, you know, times in my career, in my personal life, when I've just needed someone to talk to, and I saw him fairly regularly for years. And then kind of, the older I got in a relationship, kind of got my own life going. I didn't need him as much. But I call him every now and then and we talk. And so I have no problem talking about mental health. I think more athletes should, but we know for so long that it was looked down upon, right? If you're weak, you're not mentally stable. You know, a lot of teams, I think in the NFL specifically, would still look down on a player if they said, I need a day because I'm depressed, right? And we've seen some teams do a better job of it. We know that there are players in the NFL who have bad anxiety, who have missed games. I think Brandon Brooks famously, right? Eagles right guard, woke up one morning, just the anxiety was too much and he had to miss the game. We saw your team, Washington football team, hired the first clinician, right? The first doctor to help out, to help their athletes. So we're moving in the right direction. Not on the flip side of that, but part of the discussion, I guess, is that, you know, she did not want to do media, take media questions or do her media responsibilities that are through text. There can be a medium in the middle, right? There can be a place where it's not no media and 24/7 access, right? And there could be a happy place, because look, we're in the media now. If you want to call yourself someone in the media, be my guest, Matt. I'm in the media now, and talking to players is very helpful for my job. And I'm not even like a beat reporter. I'm not in the locker room every day. Just being able to talk, and I don't do any of those interviews, but talking to players after games, after practice, is a great way to build a relationship between the reporter who's reporting on the team and giving the information out to the fans and you. And it can also help your next broadcasting career, endorsement deals, right? It helps everyone learn about you. But there can also be a way where an athlete like Osaka says, hey, I'm not comfortable with it. Can we adjust the rules of how we do this, the way we do this, to help me out, right? If she went to the Tennis Association and said, look, I just want to do one-on-one interviews. I want to make this more informal. I want submitted questions beforehand. Whatever it is, I think there's a way, Matt, to have it where you can ask her some things about her game, about herself, about life, whatever you want to do or not do, and not have it be so formal of like her sitting in front of 50 cameras or in front of a Zoom and everyone yelling stuff at her. I think there can be a way. Okay, you know, if a player says, Hey, my PR guy, I just, you know what? Can we do something smaller, more intimate? Like, whatever it is, Matt, I think there could be a way where we can still do the job as media and players can still talk to us, but not be so formal as to where there's anxiety involved with it.
I couldn't agree more. And you gave a lot to react to. The first thing is, I think you're right. Like, people are sort of presenting this problem. Like, Mike Florio wrote this thing that it basically concluded. It said, you know, players who don't want to talk shouldn't have to. And I disagree with that, right? Like, that means that it would turn into sort of like WWE, where everyone only talks when they want to make news and it becomes very selective and whatever. I think that the most important piece of what you just said is there is this sort of like inhuman kind of transactional quality of the reporter player dynamic that just happens. And I think it probably started a long time ago, but you know, when you go into a locker room, like, I'm really curious, like, what, how you feel about this, like, as a guy who, you know, was never got very far in like the reporting side of the business, but like has gone into a locker room as media before, like, it's the weirdest process I think that you could possibly conceive of. Like, you think as a fan of sports, you're like, wow, I get to go into a locker room. Like, what that actually means is players are like changing or like getting into their rhythm for the pregame, or you know, they just lost or won or whatever, they're going through some experience, and then there's all these like dudes standing around staring at them and waiting for them to sort of like make themselves available, like often like while they're changing their clothes. Like, it's this very weird dynamic. And then, like you said, Jeff, there's just like this sort of like swarm of people that come to you and just like shout questions. And as a person, like, I hated doing it. I thought it was like a very inhumane way to sort of have a conversation with someone. And you know, it was clear the players don't really like it either, but it's in place because it's like a marketing thing for the sport. Like, it's good to give access to these players to force them to talk so that the fans can follow along, like you said. So I think the way that this is going to go in the NFL is there is going to be some sort of adjustment that maybe gets made. I think it will be a healthy one, but this idea of like oh, like, you shouldn't talk if you don't have to. Like, of course we need to be more considerate of people who say, like, hey, I can't do this today. Like, obviously. Yeah. But there has to be a balance between treating people like human beings who may not want to talk to the media in the way that they currently do, while also, you know, it is part of the job. Like, it's not every other job. This is a really unique job in the NFL specifically, where, like, you have a responsibility to be an ambassador of the sport, kind of whether you'd like it or not. It comes with the paycheck. So I don't know. It's a complicated one. There's not like an easy solution because it's a hard problem.
So you've been in locker rooms, tried to do interviews before?
Yeah.
for Katie Nolan's show, or just like for what?
No, I mean, in college, I interned at the Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun, and like would go and, you know, do game stories and stuff. And I remember I talked to Kevin Durant once, and it was like so uncomfortable. Like, first of all, right, he's a foot taller than me and he's younger than me. So I remember going to this locker room, and I like luckily was asking him about like his high school coach who was like getting honored. And all these beat reporters are like, you know, what do you think of John Wall? Like, how's it feel to be back in DC? And he just like hated it. And this was back in his OKC days when, you know, now he would probably have something funny to say to the media members because he's grown up a little bit. But
dude, he is.
He's spicy.
I mean, people say, I respect that he goes after people on Twitter, but it's like, why do you care, Kevin Durant? Like, you're the best player ever. Maybe it's because he doesn't get the recognition, I would imagine. But I also don't think Jay Williams was lying about the conversation. Jay Williams just shouldn't have shared the conversation.
I agree with that. But I'm curious, like, as a player, like, isn't it effing weird? Like, having all these strangers like watching you get dressed, like, that can't be comfortable. It is.
You get used to it, but it is, especially like when there's like, when the women are there, like, it's,
yeah,
just like drop your drows and just continue on.
And other famous like people too. It's like it's like this weird, you know, trust that has to go all around. And I mean, you talk about talking to players after games, like, you're not going to them in their lockers, you're texting your like people you already know. Like, that's how a real conversation happens, right? Like, it's not the way that it's currently designed. And I imagine in tennis, you're going all around the world and there's people in different languages and, you know, travel and all this other stuff that must be overwhelming.
I fully understand that going in front of the media in the way that you're talking about it, right? Where you're sitting and there's 75 cameras in your face, and for someone who is, their mental health is not tip top, and they already have anxiety and they already have stress and they already are a little depressed, I can understand how that is miserable and how that's not fun. And if you can avoid that, you can avoid that at all costs, which is what Osaka was talking about. The locker room stuff, you know, she doesn't have to deal with that. They're not in their locker room. So that's why they have the press conferences like they do. The locker room, when you're changed and dressed, it's not that bad, right? You have a one-on-one with a couple people. It's very, can be very low key. You know, they're going to attack Eli when I was in Odell, when I was in New York, right? They're going to get those guys, but they can hide in the training room until the media's gone. There's ways to get out of doing that. That's why I think whatever the tennis organization, whoever it is, can work with Naomi and say, hey, again, is there a way, can we have three people talk to you? Can we have a more intimate setting where it's a smaller room, less cameras? We're just going to, you know, maybe it's just audio only, whatever it is. Like, I think there's a medium there, right? Where you can kind of do. So I'm with you. Like, I originally saw her quote and I was like, oh, she's just getting out of this. And then I read the rest of it. I was like, okay, that makes more sense, right? Originally, you're like, I think a lot of times athletes don't like doing the media. And they just don't like doing it because they don't like to do it. But obviously here, there was a lot of background to it. So again, I praise her for talking about her mental health. I think more athletes should do that. I wish they did.
Yeah, I hope they do. And I hope that there's a way to come up with, you know, more player-friendly and human-friendly solutions to these problems. Because just cutting off the media entirely is not possible. Well, moving on from tennis to baseball, Jeff, you really wanted to talk about this. I'm curious how this applies back to football, but you highlighted a story about what's going on in baseball, where right now the hitters across the league are batting .236 in a recent offensive boom. It's a little bit surprising. I'm curious what you make of this story and what you want to talk about.
Yeah, so the reason why I want to get into this, and we can look, I'm a big baseball guy. I put my picks out every day. I was talking to someone about this on my Instagram, at Jeff Schwartz. I put my picks out all the time. And I know people probably get tired of it. And I was talking to my buddy about it. He goes, you must like be really, doing really bad, right? You just like suck. And I was like, no, I think I'm actually 99 and 100, which I'm getting juiced out, but like that's not for baseball every day. That's not bad, not dude. Bad. It's not bad. So look, they're putting sticky stuff on the on their fingers, the spin rate, all these balls out of control. And MLB said, look, we're gonna fix this. And the first couple of days, like Trevor Bauer's spin rate went way down. All these guys' spin rate went way down. But the question I have, Matt, about cheating, okay? You know, baseball is notorious for cheating, right? Whether it's stealing signs, trash can banging, steroids, scuffing up balls. I did a podcast yesterday with Blackjack and Paul Aduca, and Paulie was talking about how he scuffed up baseballs. Like, oh, he would just rub them in the dirt. He would, like, sharpen his clip on his shin guards so he could like cut the baseball on it before throwing it back. So cheating happens, right? Greenies and steroids, all this stuff, amphetamines, and obviously football. We've had Deflategate and Spygate and doctoring balls here and there and whatnot. How much cheating do fans really care about? Like, as a fan of baseball, my thing with the steroid era was, hey, it was fun to watch. Like, I don't know, I want to be entertained. If dudes are throwing 101 miles an hour and that's entertaining, then so be. Like, the reason why they're not hitting is not because of the sticky stuff they're putting in the baseballs. It's the philosophy of baseball. But how much cheating in sports do we accept? And what are the parameters for it?
I think what happens is fans get really mad when their faith gets shattered. Like, the thing about the Maguire-Sosa thing is, like, they became heroes. Then it was like, oh, you were lying. Like, if someone found out that Patrick Mahomes could only throw 80 yards because he was putting, you know, whatever they're putting on the baseballs on a football, everyone would get mad. But I think everyone assumes, like, yeah, there's painkillers. Like, yeah, there's, you know, how did Terrell Suggs come back from an Achilles injury in 8 months? Like, stuff happens. You know what I mean? And I think that kind of stuff, you know, I think as fans, we all accept. I think it's when you mentioned the Astros. The Astros win the World Series. They have this 5'7" second baseman that hits 30 home runs and never strikes out. And then you're like, oh, this is why. You know what I mean? It's when we suspend our own disbelief about something we've never seen before. And then it's like, oh, well, that's why they were cheating. I think that's where the rug gets pulled out from. I think it's harder in a sport like football or basketball, because like in the actual game, like there isn't that much you could do. Do you know what I mean? Like if Steph Curry took steroids, it wouldn't mean he could like that wouldn't change that he can shoot from half court and make it. You know what I mean? Like it's a little bit different. And I think that's why baseball and this war of attrition gets sucked into all these scandals, but I'm not sure.
I think what it comes down to is how much it helps a team win or not win. Right. Because when everyone's taking steroids, it's kind of even playing field. Everyone's taking steroids, right? Like the Giants didn't win a World Series. They got to one in 2002. The Cubs didn't win a World Series. Now, the Cardinals, I don't think won with Maguire during that time. Maybe early 2000s. I don't think, right? They won with like the Yadier Molina teams, right?
Yeah, Pujols, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, they're not winning titles, right? They're not winning championships. Now, I mean, did Clemens win a championship with the Yankees? I don't think he did, right? Like, I don't think Clemens won a championship.
And we're going back a little bit. Know all this
stuff. So, like, again, like, so we're not seeing these guys like win championships. So it doesn't upset us as much. Yes, they cheated. They took steroids. But when the Astros are banging on trash cans and helping them win a World Series, we take it more seriously. In football, if someone were stealing signs, which the Patriots did, which everyone did, I'm not sure that really helped them win, but everyone was doing it. It shouldn't have been that big of a deal. Deflating footballs, whatever else. Good. Everyone's scuffing up the football. It is what it is. Like it doesn't help. Now with the Patriots, of course, people look at it a different way. But I think that's what it is, Matt. Right? Like if there was football, if it was cheating in football, where a team won because of that. And again, we don't have any fact that happened. We would look at it differently than a guy taking steroids. Which it's funny. No one cares if football players take steroids. Like it's like baseball player. It's like, oh my God. Football player. It's like, oh yeah, I guess he did. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's a presumption of innocence and guilt almost. Like I think people assume with football, like, you know, there isn't the same shadow of doubt that there is on baseball. Like, because of the Maguire-Sosa thing, we'll forever think that baseball is bullshit. Like, I honestly think that that's what's going to happen to fans of our age. With football, really?
I don't give a shit. Do you care?
I just think it's like, I just think there's always shenanigans. Like, how many, like, the two, there's been a massive scandal in baseball for, you know, it seems like every couple of years. And for all of these, you know, these great pitchers of the last era to just not matter, like Roger Clemens just doesn't matter, like, you know, because of steroids and stuff, like that's a shame, you know, like you lose your faith in the sport. For football, it's just sort of like, I also think people get popped in football. Like it happens, and it was happening before, where you see, you know, it doesn't always get enforced, i.e. Ray Lewis and the deer antler spray at the Super Bowl, which, by the way, kind of goes under the radar. But it does feel like there are consequences in the NFL, where in baseball there wasn't.
Ray Lewis and Super Bowls, never, always interesting, huh?
Yeah, deer antler spray, just no suspension. The investigation was after the season. Always on my mind.
Yeah. All right. What? We're ending with time to laugh at funny tweets, right?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's switch gears from my bitterness. All right, Jeff. Well, I pitched this to you because I was reading a headline that just made me laugh. And it was Mason Rudolph saying that his goal was to be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I texted that to you and you wrote back, yeah, well, I want to look like Brad Pitt. And I was just sort of like, yeah, this is what happens around now. Is like, there's all these stupid ass stories from people who have too much time and no consequences for them to just shoot off and say crazy stuff. So I'm curious, can you top Mason Rudolph pretending that he's going to start over Ben Roethlisberger as a better headline?
Well, to be fair, Mason Rudolph said 2022.
Does that change anything?
I mean, as we're recording this today, Jordan Love is having like the best OTA of all time. People are like tweeting about it. He's like with fire emojis.
We predicted
and, like,
it.
It's just incredible. Like, it's this time of year, man. Best shape of your life, right?
Yep.
Best shape of your life all the time, which is the way people write. But I want to get into my tweet of the week, because this is going to be – we enjoy a good hearty laugh on this show. So this lady tweet out, @Laura_Hogan. It's the most incredible tweet I've ever seen. It's the funniest tweet I've seen that wasn't supposed to be funny, okay? A teeny tiny inclusive language thing I've tried to get better at this year is avoiding Northern Hemisphere specific seasonal language. Like, instead of saying this summer, I say the months I mean, or quarter three. Because it might not be that season for me. Excuse me. Because it might be that season for me, but not that season for everybody. Oh boy. Matt's crying. He's crying laughing. But here the responses are even better. I've stopped saying good morning as I realize it might be the afternoon or even nighttime for some. Now I say happy day, but this can be problematic if someone's having a bad one.
I don't even know if what you're saying are jokes back or if people actually mean this.
No. I've stopped using color to describe things I see. Like, instead of saying this red scarf, I say the 450 THG scarf, because it might be red for me, but not the color for a colorblind person. What is happening right now, Matt? What are we doing? I'm looking forward to quarter three football this year, when quarter three begins again.
Yeah, I hope that you'll be able to take a trip next year on your Q2 break. that you'll have a great holiday season in Q4.
I'm Jewish. What if I follow the Hebrew calendar?
There you go.
Quarter three is like...
It's not 2021. It's like 5030 or something.
It's like 5,370. But my new year is in September. So quarter three for me is not quarter three for you, Laura. You think about that, Laura? Seriously, I'm sorry if you're in the Southern Hemisphere right now and it's snowing when it's 88 in Charlotte today. Like, I'm talking about where I live. I'm sorry that it's summer and hot here. And it's who would think, if you're listening to this podcast, Matt, if I said, man, it's 89 in Charlotte today, it's supposed to rain, they're like, you know what, fuck Jeff Schwartz talking about his Northern Hemisphere language. Like, what the hell, man?
You should be more inclusive. And hey, what is that in Celsius? Like, let's go. Like, you got to consider.
Why
everybody.
Do we? I look. You know me, Matt. I am inclusive. I don't give a heck what people do in their personal lives. I'm welcoming of everybody. But like, we just got some of this a little too far, man. It makes some of us look a little wacky.
What it sure does. Can I read you my other football related headlines
please,
that made me laugh?
Please.
Okay. This one was good. Jared Goff says he feels empowered by Lions coaches.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, man. That's a classic June story. Here was my last one. Randy Gregory emerging as Cowboys leader. That was from the Dallas Morning News. I loved it. It's like that guy has played like three total games in his life.
That
made me laugh.
That's not good.
That one made me laugh.
That came from today?
That was today. That was Dallas Morning News. I have it open behind a weird pop-up ad. But yep, Randy Gregory focused on future emerging as Cowboys leader. I don't know if I buy it.
Wow. I don't buy it either.
Well, Jeff, we ran the gamut from tennis to baseball to roasting some random lady on Twitter. I think we've given the people their money's worth.
The random lady on Twitter deserved to be roasted. Her account, by the way, is private, unfortunately. So we can't just make fun of her continually. But
Laura's leaving this podcast in a body bag.
I appreciate everyone listening to this podcast in quarter two as we head into quarter three of the year. Very enjoyable. Thank you for listening. Oh, by the way, well, before we get out of here, if you're still listening, you really love our show. Shout out to intern Hank, who just shot his shot on the first episode.
Let's go, Matt, Hank.
You guys hired Hank, and he came on the text thread and just fired away at topics. Like I know you've ever had an intern before, like Nick might have been an intern at one point. I don't know. But he came hot, dude. I like it.
I loved it. The reason Hank got hired is he is a fellow WFT fan. That's not the only reason he got hired, but it certainly didn't hurt his case in my eyes. Yeah, it's a great job by Hank. Hopefully he'll contribute lots of good ideas like he already has.
Love it. Good work on day one. All right, everyone. Talk to you guys next week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. Talk to everyone later. Out.